I was born in the southeast in South Carlow, and when I was a couple of months old, I was given up for adoption.
You're listening to Humans of Politics, a podcast about how it feels to be a politician. My name is A.B. Philbin-Bowman, and my guest today is the Labour TD, former party leader and former Taoiseach, Joan Burton.
And from what I have traced of my history, I would have been both in care in a place called Temple Hill in Blackrock and also fostered out to several different families. And then when I was about 2.5, I was adopted by the Burtons. Well, I was actually formally adopted, I think, when I was about 4, because I do remember social workers coming to inspect me.
How did it feel to be an adopted child at that time?
I have incredibly happy feelings of going to live with the Burtons. It's hard to believe now, but people were often quite judgmental towards children who had been adopted. Where I lived in Arklow Street, and indeed, you know, in places like Rialto Cottages, everybody knew or seemed to know that I was adopted. Everybody in the schools I went to about 3 different schools, knew I was adopted. Now, I didn't have the cap on then to realise that, certainly for an institution like a school, if you hand in a birth cert, people can see very quickly that the person is adopted, because it's a short form of birth cert, because you don't get the long form. People like priests and nuns would always say to you, and I never forgot it, "You're very lucky." And I actually began to believe, actually, I am a very lucky person. I didn't realise that it was a bit of, my God, you know, you're very lucky, you found a lovely family, or they found you. And I didn't have any knowledge of what the institutions were like. I did, for instance, in Stanhope Street, when I made my Holy Communion, my mother brought me into the laundry there. And I can remember being terrified, the machinery and everything like that, the calendars for stretching out the clothes and all that kind of stuff. It was all overwhelming. And I never forgot it. I suppose I must have been about 7.5 or so when I made my communion. And I literally was brought around like I was the queen of it. And forever after, when these issues arose in political circles, I think of the women who were there. They could have been just in their 30s, but they felt quite middle-aged. Many of them, by the way, hadn't had children, but basically a busybody, could have been a local priest or nun, felt there was some kind of moral risk, and the power of the church to actually do things like that to people. So I suppose I was unusual in that, without realising it, I had this knowledge. And then as the revelations came out, I gradually felt more empowered myself. But initially, I never said to anybody who came to me as a constituent, well, actually, I've been adopted myself.
How do you think those experiences shaped your character?
I think I'm an optimist as a consequence of my experiences. So I suppose in a certain sense, I was always aware that I was a little bit different. And then when I went to the convent school, and one of the people who worked in the convent, she was living in the convent, was Sister Stanislaus Kennedy. And she was one of the first formally trained qualified social workers in Ireland. And she would come into our classes and kind of tell us about what she was doing. She ran a bit of a girls' club as well. And myself and a few of her friends were involved in it. And to be honest, I think loads of people just had a big crush on her because, you know, she was a very attractive, compelling personality.
How did you find school?
School kind of agreed with me, and I agreed with school. So by the end of that, I got a scholarship to UCD. And so I was one of the first people in the area to go on to college. Then, unfortunately, when I was about 17, my mother, my adoptive mother, got very ill. And by the time I was 20, she died. My dad got married again quite quickly. So myself and my brother, we kind of then looked after each other. Paul is about 5 years younger than me. I've always, I think, had an inner grit and toughness, because when things are difficult, you do have to try and work out what's the best thing you can do.
So how did your background prepare you for entering the National Parliament at a time when you would have been one of very few women there?
The only thing I found really difficult with politics is maybe more than being in an academic sphere or maybe working in an accounting firm. There's a lot more competition visibly present in politics. And also there's a fair number of people in politics whom I think feel that being nasty and being angry is a policy and it's a mechanism. I do think that's a problem, for instance, for women in general in politics, because there's a fair old bit of machismo. The Dáil, when I joined in 1992, was very much a man's club. In fact, probably modelled on an English gentleman's club that you'd read about in a 19th century novel. You know, women were mentally, if not physically, patted on the head, and people would tell you, oh, you're looking gorgeous or whatever. This was obviously long before Me Too. But at the same time, I must say, I have always been, and I've never hidden it, ambitious in politics to basically have, you know, people like myself there, because certainly when I joined, there were very, very few people from a working class background. There were traditional, say, Labour people who had come up through the trade union movement, but that was a very male environment as well. And one of the things that really shocked me way back in that first government was that when people like Mary Raftery...
This is the journalist who really brought to light a lot of the child abuse that was going on in church and state-run institutions.
When people like her brought out a number of the documentaries, there was an awful lot of shock in the Dáil. And I remember sitting around in a group of people and they saying, did you ever hear of these institutions? And I'm going, did I ever not hear of these institutions? Because, you know, where I grew up in Dublin, boys who went off the rails or misbehaved, even as small kids, would be warned they could end up in Artane, and girls would be warned about Golden Bridge. And that's why, you know, when I met people like Christine Buckley, who'd been one of the women in Golden Bridge, the amazing effort it was for them to come out and tell that story and really let people know what had happened to them.
Just coming back to your life in politics, you went into government in 2011. The previous government had been wiped out, really, following the financial crisis. There was huge support for Fine Gael and Labour. That government had an enormous mandate. But very quickly, you had to make a lot of unpopular decisions. You brought in austerity and your party leader actually stepped down, and you took on that job at a pretty difficult time for the party, and then had to lead into an election where most of your colleagues lost their seats. I'm just wondering what it felt like to be at the receiving end of that much public anger and to be the leader of the party at such a challenging time.
Well, I think, first of all, you have to have a sense that what you're trying to do is important and significant. I had lived in the 1980s in Africa. I'd seen countries which had lost their banking systems. I had also read an awful lot and gone to a lot of meetings relating to the IMF, for instance, when they came into Tanzania, where I was living and working in the university at the time, and there were colleagues who were on the negotiating teams. And I just had a sense that these people would come in, stay in the biggest hotel, they'd write their reports, and their judgment would be very, very, very harsh. And, you know, possibly it was a failure on my part and the Labour Party's part that we weren't able sufficiently to convey that so that people could understand that to get to the other side can just be really difficult. So, you know, when you're saying, how does it feel? It feels jolly difficult. And really, I think that's what's so important in a politician's life, that you do have people like your immediate family, my husband, my daughter, who are tremendously supportive of me, critically supportive now, because they had very strong political views themselves. But also I had friends as well. And all the time, all during those years and since, so many people came up to me, gave me a hug, told me, look, it's really, really difficult. We appreciate what you're doing. And those people outnumbered the people who were kind of spitting hate. And also, I think with the development of social media in Ireland, there has been a kind of a development almost of political hate and wanting to take people apart. as being a political philosophy to literally destroy another human being. So it means the political space has become more difficult. But you'd wonder, why do people feel that they have to vent like that all the time? Would they try for a balanced comment? But it may be that they just type in whatever they type in and then they forget all about it until the next outrage happens that they feel they're going to vent about again.
Just on the wider theme of public anger in general, one very striking example of public anger was an incident where you, as Taoiseach, were trapped in a car surrounded by a group of fairly angry protesters, all of which was led by a politician from a different party who you've just spent the last hour sitting in a studio with. How did that feel for you?
Well, I didn't actually realise he was going to be on the programme when I accepted to come on the programme. And I have to say, I probably would have thought a little bit more about it. But I had agreed to do the programme, so I just came and did the programme. We sit on a number of committees, but I don't have any interaction. He's never apologised.
How do you stay sane in this job?
I've always been quite reflective, and every day I think. I walk a lot. I inherited green fingers from whoever I inherited them from. So I'm quite into gardens and stuff like that and trees. I live very close to the Phoenix Park. So one of my political hobby horses forever has been the protection of the Phoenix Park. So like there's a lot of pleasure potentially in politics.
Joan Burton, thank you so much. Thanks for listening to Humans of Politics. If anything really annoyed you or got you thinking, all feedback is very welcome. I'm on Twitter as AB Philbin Bowman, at ABIEPB. You can hear every episode of the show for free. It's on the RT radio player or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Humans of Politics. Finally, if you'd like more people to hear this conversation, the simplest and cheapest thing you could do would be to leave us a nice review on iTunes or Spotify. Thanks again for listening.